Thank you, Rupali, for this wonderful venture. Congratulations is a very small word. All love, blessings, prayers. And it makes me feel very proud. I always knew that there is something exceptional about you. Let me speak a few words. When you came as a student, not only as a keen learner, but with a subtle understanding. Because I must say, Indian psychology is a field that cannot be easily understood with the gross way of looking at life. The gross way of looking at life, by that I mean that there is only this bodily mental reality and all else is either vague or an epiphenomena. So by vague or an epiphenomena, I mean that there are two basic paradigms. One is that the body is the main thing. And the soul is perhaps there, may be there, may not be there. Maybe it's a glandular secretion. Maybe it's a brain, pineal gland. Maybe it is or it is not. That is one approach. And that approach has led to a certain kind of development in every field. In psychology, of course, which is the subject today, but in science, in art, in politics, in administration, in medicine, in a worldview, in self-view, and everywhere, economics, everywhere. And the other approach, which has led to a very different kind of self-view and worldview, is that we are primarily a spiritual being, as Stella de Jardin said, having a human experience. So we are a spiritual being in our fundamental core, and we are going through the human experience, just as we have gone through other experiences in other lives. And just as we leave lives behind us, we have lives before us. So I love this idea of 100 years. Well, not only we should not need mental health intervention, but there should not be mental health at all. And is it possible? And Indian thought, Indian psychology says, yes, it's possible. And when we go to the core of that suffering, why do we suffer? And I know I had started with introducing Rupali's subtle understanding. And that's where the difference goes, because to explain all this requires volumes and lot of discussions, talk with a certain kind of understanding which regards body as everything. But I found in Rupali that, you know, she could grasp these concepts so beautifully. And not only she could grasp, she is into practicing them. So it's not just a theoretical thing for her. And that's why for an Indian psychology-oriented program, the psychologist, the teacher, and whatever you may call it, counselor or mentor, is himself his own laboratory. He must himself become his own laboratory. Just before I was coming here, I had a very interesting little beautiful small little incident which I would like to share. So I had a phone call from a very, very, very dear child whom, you know, exceptionally developed. And this child had a bit of a problem, and it was about the mind playing this way, that way. And I had 3 minutes to come here and connect to the webinar. So I just asked her one thing, 12-year-old child. So I said, see, let's do one thing. Just be very quiet, very quiet, very quiet. And this child is exceptional. She followed it. He said, just feel in your heart. So what do you feel in your heart? Do you think you are right? Do you think you are not right? What does your heart say? And I could see that she has become very quiet. And then I told her, you don't need to share with anyone, because it's between you and the divine. And within a short, maybe half a minute, she burst into a beautiful smile. And I said, keep it with yourself. Now, this is something which I have learned from one of the mother's, not only writings, but real life examples, where she would tell a person that feel in your heart, the truth within your heart. And if you ask the person to speak about it, then it gets falsified. Because there is a tendency of the human mind, when we are speaking to someone, we automatically tend to either justify, color it just that little bit, just a little polish. So when we speak to the heart and when we look deep inside, we see it, as it is told in Indian psychology, it is the seat of dharma. Deep heart doesn't lie. There is, of course, a surface heart which is as prone to lying as everything else, but deep within the heart, and so easy to connect with that heart. And that's what we have missed out. As I keep saying several times, it is a civilizational failure or a civilizational disease that we don't know how to love. In fact, we have suppressed love so much that we have become too rational, too analytical human beings, that we have forgotten the core of creation. And that core is love all over creation. The love that binds the star, that famous wonderful thing of Dante, where he goes through all the divine comedy, where he goes through all the planes, and at the end he has received help from one of his friends who has departed, Beatrice, and he sees her as a divine mother. It's a very long, beautiful, fascinating story, and I'm resisting the temptation to recount it. People can read it. And at the end he asks her, why did you come to help me? In fact, he meets Virgil, and Virgil says, I cannot help you beyond a point. Virgil is extremely, he wrote the longest epic, Aeneid. So he, in any language, of course, in Sanskrit, it's the longest is Mahabharata. This is the second longest. And if you take English, it is Sri Aurobindo Savitri. So he says, I can't take you beyond. So he says, who will take me beyond? He says, Beatrice. Now, Beatrice is a simple village girl. And when he meets us, he's surprised that, how come you? He says, yes, I am here to take you. I have been sent by the great Trinity, the triune one, Satchidanand. And he says, but why did you come to help me? She says, very simply, because of love. And then she explains, love that has woven the stars. So you see, we have forgotten this core, and we suffer. And deep within man, this anguish, this suffering, this loneliness, this boredom, and to compensate for this boredom, I often hear, today itself I had I don't have clients that way, but somebody who just said that, he has a heartbreak and he is suffering, he is feeling very lonely. So I just said, you see, you still can love. So love all life that is around you. Love the plants, love the trees, love the breeze around you, love the sun, love the animals, love human beings. There is so much love to give, and so much love. When we give a little bit, the whole universe comes back. But humanity today is suffering a lot because of that. Another cause, and that's because what I call as the lack of vitamin L, vitamin love. And of course also vitamin F, faith. It is one of the problems of our times that we think either of reason or of faith. So we have the great divide between religion and science. But actually the two can be beautifully interwoven together. This is what we see in Indian psychology. Extremely rational at one level. Indian spiritual approach is very rational. At the same time, it has leaps and bounds of faith. Faith is the one that starts us on the journey. Can one ever start on a great venture without having a faith that there is a possibility of arriving? Can I start the journey to any, even a, half the height of Mount Everest, if I have no faith that I can ever arrive? There is faith, which is the beginning. Faith is that light in ignorance, which shows us that yes, it leads us, opens the path, and then we walk. And that walk requires many things. So vitamin F, and above all, vitamin D. I am so happy, and I must say a bit surprised, for the first time I am seeing this kind of inauguration where on Saraswati Puja Day, which is Vasant Panchmi, Saraswati is the goddess of creation. And Vasant Panchmi, it is the day when spring starts, life starts to blossom. It's literally like a new year for us. And how beautifully, it requires great courage, Rupali, I must say, to start it directly with invoking the divine consciousness. And this is something very beautiful. And it shows that you carry the courage of conviction within you of what you are doing. So what really is the divine? Because many people immediately, oh, divine. And on top of it, she has used the word Twastri and asked her, how did you get to this word? Now, just for people who may not be aware, so we know that there is a pantheon of Indian Vedic gods, and they have evolved over a period of time. They have not gone. And while in the Western context, the gods have been done away with. But you can't do away, because gods are nothing but those conscious beings and forces They are like cosmic managers. So you may close your eyes, but they are still there, which manage this universe, cosmic powers, if you like. If you want to put impersonally. And we may say that, well, how do you say cosmic powers? Very simply, if we take it that universe ultimately can be resolved into a stupendous play of power. So there has to be one source of power, the powerhouse of all power, from which all kinds of powers have radiated. But these powers have their own resting places. These are the worlds, the beings. If there are no resting places, it will just go chaotically. And what is beyond the power is the being, the divine, the Ishvara and the Shakti. So this, of course, is going into the deepest, profoundest secrets of yoga. But just to come to power, stupendous dance of power. So who is Tvastri? Tvastri are the ones, they are the gods who made the thunderbolt for Indra, with which he kills Vratrasur. Now, some people may be aware of this legend. The legend of Indra and Vratrasur I have found so interesting in both yogic journey as well as the journey of human beings in their everyday life. So Vratrasur is the last demon that Indra must fight. Indra is the god of the global consciousness. He is Sahasraksh. He can see all around. So Indra is in the Vedic Indra. I'm not talking of the Puranic Indra, but the Vedic Indra. He is Sahasraksh. He is in the Vedas. He is the king of the gods. So he governs all the other gods. All of them, if Indra wants, all these gods can start functioning. But there is, in opposition to the gods, forces that retard. They want to retard the original plan. And what is that original plan? Original plan is that the human soul must bring out. It's like a seed which must bring out all the latent divine possibilities inside it. The original plan is summarized in one single idea. Ekoham Bahushyam. The one wants to become many. And who is this one? This one is Satchidanand, his truth, consciousness, bliss, force. So he wants many, many, many of his. So this idea is buried in creation. And how does he become many? By tapas. Tapas means concentrating our entire energy and being into one single becoming. And therefore it becomes. Now that's again, a huge subject. How does a seed become a tree? Because the tapas, the concentration of the idea in the seed is on this seed becoming into that tree which the idea holds within itself. So what is the idea within man? So the idea within man is that man, thou must be even as God. That's why the greatest, one of the most profound truths uttered ever in any psychological literature is Soham Asmi. I am that divine truth. I not only carry the divine within myself, but I am divine in my deepest truth. But it also, this idea is complemented with another, Tattvamasi. All this is the divine. The greatest idea, and we see this is how the Upanishads and the Vedas, these profound truths, which we have unfortunately forgotten because we have started from the other end, that body is all. And so we have not explored these recesses. Whereas Indian psychologists, they said, let us first explore the greatest truth, the deepest truth, the most profound reality, the origin, the source, the base, the stable, basis, foundation of all things. And from there, so Indian psychology came down from spiritual realizations. So it understood the universe through a top-down view or a within-outward view. Whereas modern psychology starts taking a downward-up view. And quite naturally it fails, because if you are standing on the base of a hill, you can't see more than maybe a couple of thousand feet. But if you have traversed the journey and stand atop the mountain, you can see a much better panoramic view. So this is the basic difference. So coming back to our story, the Vedic rishis saw the human soul on a journey, which is an evolutionary journey. So Indian psychology, one of the most fascinating aspects of not only Indian psychology, entire Indian thought, that it takes into account evolution. And I think this idea of evolution applies not only to material creation and the vital world, world of plants and animals, but it applies to man a lot more. Because unlike animals, which are true to their type, but evolve into human being at some point of time, or rather they go through a series of mutations and then finally into a human. Human beings have this capacity of self-evolution. That's why we have education. Education itself is a tacit acceptance that we can become better. Otherwise, why should we educate? We should be happy with whatever we are, but it's inbuilt within us. And when this education takes a many-sided approach, very concentrated approach, then it is called as conscious evolution. This conscious evolution is yoga. So spirituality in that sense is conscious evolution of the human into the divine. Because human beings are meant to outgrow our human frames and arrive at a greater divine becoming. Proof all over India. Go from that ages, right till date. India is one country which has preserved this great secret. And its implications are many. It means that that's our journey. And if we just remember, even remembering this greater picture, at places in Indian psychology, we simply use the word Smriti. In Isha Upanishad, there is a beautiful half a line. Om kritosmar kritam smar kritosmar kritam smar. Oh, will that which was done remember, that which was done remember. Just to remember that great idea which is leading us is so beautiful. It's like being like a river. The river needs to remember two things. Where does it come from? And where is it going? Now, these two things determine its course. How do they determine? When we remember the origin, it gives us an impelling power. And if we remember where we have to go, it gives us direction. And once we know the direction and the destination, we will veer through all the difficulties. So what is our origin? So if I say my origin is animal, man is a two-legged animal, or a worm, or nothing but a play of material forces working in the brain, then how much force will I have within me? Only that much which an animal has. And if my destiny is just to become maybe a little more decent, egoistic human being who is having the average so-called normal human being who is living only to satisfy his desires, but in a certain degree so that it doesn't hurt other people's desires, given a chance, he will not bother about it, but maybe rules, regulations, they prevent us. And that's what, Freud observed, that behind human beings, there is an animal sitting. But what does the Indian psychology say? There's not an animal is our past, but there is a God also sitting behind us. And to release this God out of the prison is the work of works, which happens through an inner law of sacrifice. Huge subject, so I'm not going into it. Sacrificing the lower for the higher. This is how, and this sacrificing the lower for the higher is what is known as dharma. Dharma is that which helps us to move towards ever higher, greater and vaster horizon. So it is something which is like entering into from the larger perspective, win-win situation. So we are on a journey where ultimately, if we understand it's right, then there is nothing like a loss. We are constantly moving from a lesser to a greater becoming. So in that, there are cosmic powers which oppose. They want more the merrier. You see, it's very interesting. I'll take a small little example. I have studied in AFMC and we used to have people, obviously a small group. Drugs are available and they would go for drugs and all that. And sometimes me and a couple of friends, we would sit and say, look here, if it is true that man is nothing but a bundle of chemicals, then what's wrong with that? You know, you're adolescent, 16, 17, so you begin to start arguing logically. What's wrong with that? If I'm just a bundle of chemicals, what's the purpose of really living? So some of us started like that. And you see, always when people go for such activities, they always want numbers. You must have heard gangs of underworld. And when a yogi goes to yoga, he goes alone. He is not looking for, how many will come with me for yoga? He doesn't take his journey that way. Yes, when he reaches, as the Kena Upanishad describes, he becomes like the flower. And that flower, its sweetness, its nectar, its fragrance attracts many others. But he is not looking for numbers, because that's how the pyramid of life goes. And it's very interesting that this mass, this inconscient wants masses. It wants them to, this past holds us back. Even though within it is the foundation, the secret, because there is something in the past which has impelled us towards where we are today. So hidden in this darkness, cloak of darkness, there is still the divine impelling us through all the challenges, trials, tribulations, errors, stumblings. There is a kind of guidance hidden. So past is a foundation. To understand this foundation, this hidden guidance in life, which has led us to the present. And future, present is the material. Now when we become aware of this hidden guidance in life, then we can make use of it consciously and go toward the future. So that's how Shivindu speaks about the subconscious yoga and the conscious yoga. So coming back to a story of Indra and Vritasura. So there are cosmic forces which wants to hold us back. And there are manifestations of these forces in mental illnesses. We use the word depression, schizophrenia, this, that, all kinds of terminologies. Equally, there are forces which help us. The godlike forces. The forces which, for instance, to take an example, suddenly one day we feel depressed, all kind of depressing thoughts come to us. And people tell us, think positively, but we cannot. It's the most common advice and the least followed advice is think positive. Because nobody teaches us how to think positive. Everybody knows that we should think positive. Yet we are bombarded by a barrage of thoughts. We don't even know where these thoughts come from. We may say they are neuronal activities. It's absolutely absurd and nonsense that, you know, neuronal activity is suddenly generating thoughts of all kinds in different people at different states. Well, human brain is a machine, like a hardware of a computer. It's software, which is subtle. Mind is a subtle element. And how this software has been programmed, what we call as conditioning, partly determines the kind of things which will enter or how the hardware will translate. Hardware is just a possibility, that's all. But the software, now in that software, can we condition and program it in such a way that it can go towards more and more positive or uplifting thoughts? And that's one of the reasons why study of works like the Gita, simply reading the Gita, you see, before the psychiatrists came into existence, Indians had the Gita. And I know so many people who came out of grief, who came out of so many things, just by reading the Gita. Why? Because it reveals, one, the profoundest secrets. If one wants one single stopper to get all the material of Indian psychology without really, because one is in a hurry, not much time, pick up the Gita. And I would recommend essays on the Gita. Everything that you want to know about Indian psychology is there in a very practical way. Of course, the literature is very vast. One can go into the Upanishads and the Vedas and many other Puranas and Ramayana and Mahabharata. One can learn. I personally have learned when my students used to ask where to read psychology from, I used to tell them Mahabharata and Ramayana. You'll find so much more about psychology. So now there are within us these godlike elements. They are seeking release. This one reason why people are, one reason why they suffer, because they have deviated from the truth of their own being. And therefore they go here and there, but there is no counselor to tell us what is the truth of our being. What is it that we are seeking? Perhaps what we are seeking is hidden deep within us. That's what Indian psychology says. The joy you are seeking here, the money, wealth, your satisfaction you are seeking there, the peace you are seeking here is all within us. That's why we are seeking. Somewhere we have this intuition that's possible. Why do we seek perfect understanding in love? Because we somewhere believe it is possible. Otherwise we should not seek. If man is just an animal, we should be looking for only animal pleasures. That's what that kind of psychology leads to. But if we believe, intuitively we all believe, that no, man is a beautiful being. And so, therefore we seek beautiful things from others, expect. Rather than that, we should release this God imprisoned within us. But this is not an easy task, and that's where the fight between the gods and the demons, the Devasur Sangram, takes place. And in that Sangram, in that thing, what is our role? They are fighting these forces. Our role is to make the choices. So the importance of choices, prayers and shreyas. There is a choice which will puts us on the side of the gods. And this is a choice which puts us on the side of the titans. I have a role to play. This role is about making the choices. And according to the choice, the journey and the path, the challenges, the difficulties and all this opens. So the last leg of this journey is when the highest and the lowest are face to face. That's Indra and Vritasura. Now Indra is trying everything, but he cannot. He needs a weapon because Vritasura has all kinds of boons. That story is symbolic. Not going into that. Many such stories are very, very interesting symbolically, like the Angiras and the cows legend. But anyway, so then ultimately Vajra is made for Indra by Tvastri. He is a fashioner. He makes forms. But what is the significance of this? It's made out of the Samudra Fen. Thunderbolt is made out of all that the sea throws out. Just imagine what a symbolic story. All that it would regard as waste, you can't do anything with it. And that is turned into a mighty weapon for Indra to cleave the den and slay the demon called Vritasura. Now look at this story. This is a story of Tvastri is empowering the gods. If you translate into our human language, it is empowering the god-like elements. Why? Because we have not nourished them. It's the tragedy of the last couple of centuries that we have gone entirely followed the extremely materialistic gospel. So we have impoverished, malnourished the spiritual elements within us. So we don't have the strength, the courage, the wisdom to fight all the darkness. We have been besieged by a dark, worldview. And no wonder, you see, when you read these existentialist books and some others, it's such a dark picture that is painted. Quite naturally, if man is nothing but a dignified animal, if there's nothing in this world except matter, then no doubt life is dark. So the more we cut off from our spiritual element, the more we suffer. The more we are anguished, we go to doctors who don't know this deeper aspect of the whole story, because they are also trained, unfortunately, in the standard way. So they apply, they give drugs, they use some kind of counseling methods. But ultimately, this suffering is an existential angst in the higher sense, not existential philosophy, but the deeper God-like element, the divine who is hidden within us, imprisoned God, seeking release. And just like when a bird in a cage, it's all right, happy when, it is small. But imagine if it's not an ordinary bird, but a swan. As it begins to grow, it will feel stifled. Because there is within it the angst to grow. And there is the prison. So we are like that little swan and we are growing. And when we are very small, this soul of man, this little swan, baby swan, when it is very small, it is fine with the covering of ignorance, the prison of ignorance. All that it needs is little feeding space. And it is happy to just parrot out something. It looks good and people appreciate all these appearances. But a time comes when the baby swan is growing. That's again the story of that Matsya avatar. So as it grows, it needs more space. Do we understand now why children say we need space? Because this evolutionary boost, we are living in an age when there is a sudden burst of evolutionary energy. Now there are many people who are unable to handle this energy. And therefore they are collapsing also. It's like you're trying to lift the giant bow of Shiva, but you're not strong enough, because Shiva's bow cannot be lifted up only by Dehbal. It also requires Atmal, which comes by strengthening the divine elements. Otherwise, you can't lift it. If you try by only Dehbal, it will collapse upon you and you will die. This is the challenge we are facing today. We have plenty of things to satiate our outer life. But we have plenty of things to stifle the spiritual element. The bars of ignorance are being strengthened with every advertisement which assures you some comfort, some money and whatever else. And it is only strengthening that many bars. It's weaving. But this little bird is growing, it cannot live forever inside the cage of ignorance. And therefore it must step out and fly in the vast, unlimited horizons. That freedom man is seeking. So the cry for freedom is not just, I want to do whatever we feel like. That's the dark way of understanding freedom. Again, we need space and freedom. This is the cry of today's time. But we have misunderstood this freedom. It's not the animal-like freedom of the jungle world. In jungle world, there is no rule. The only rule, if you like, is survival of the fittest. And fitness is not necessarily brute strength. It may be swiftness, it may be strategy, it may be cunning. But the rule, then human beings create certain mental rules. And then the rule of the evolved one will not be survival of the fittest, but the survival of the bestest. And there's a difference between the fittest and the bestest. The bestest is someone who has released within him the highest, the best possibilities. And the bestest in India was known by a very interesting name. Arya. Arya was not people who invaded all these bunkum theories which were made purely for political purposes. Arya literally applies, you know, it's a word also in Greek, aristos. It is also a word in Persian. So it always implied the best, the highest, the noblest. So there is in us the highest, the bestest. And that which is the highest and the bested, eventually that is going to not only survive, but be the leader, that solitary, king. And nature will ultimately support. Because nature itself has two sides. As the Gita says, there is a double nature in us. There is a lower nature, which is more, tries to bind us, tie us down to ignorance. The three currents of nature, sattva, rajas and tamas. Not going into all the nitty-gritties of it. But there is in us then higher super nature, the divine mother who is pulling us. And that nature is constituted of light, freedom, wideness, bliss, sweetness, love, strength. All the beautiful divine elements. What those divine elements are, one place where we can find it. Again, a single shop stopper is the Gita, chapter 16. So what are those godlike elements? Now, wherever there are godlike elements within us, which are wanting to emerge, there comes the vitamin D. The divine himself assists the release of these elements. So there are two kinds of layers of humanity within us. One which is asuric. And this asuric lives in not only just an egocentric view, extremely selfish, which it believes that the world is for its own consumption. Consumerism, utilitarianism, all of them are products. Extreme commercialism, deception, cheating, all this comes from this extremely egocentric, selfish point of view, which is the result of believing that man is an animal. Because naturally, if an animal is animal, well, he lives for himself. But the other way is the godlike. And godlike way of life is where it's not just you, but a larger not just human beings, not just your language speaking people, not just your state people, but there is a greater human becoming, an evolution which is going on, and this larger humanity connects with that higher stream. So we can use the word that there is a humanity, and they are both within us, the asuras and the devas, and there are of course human beings who are representatives, who are predominantly asuric, and human beings, very few, but who are predominantly Devic. So the Asuric human beings, their influence cast a very negative impact upon human beings. If you meet, you'll be depressed. If you live near someone, your life will be eaten away. And this is not superstition. I can say this with nearly how many? 35 to 40 years of practice behind me. 35 years of psychiatric practice. Yes, they're human beings, predominantly Asuric. The influence and, you know, everything. And there are places which are like that, which are habitations of these kind of beings. But there are human beings who are predominantly Devic. They don't need to do anything. They don't need to put a magic wand to take you through a very complicated process. Their presence itself is liberating. Their presence itself helps mankind to grow. Their presence itself opens the doors of the prisons and releases the godlike elements within us. So may I just pray that, I'm sure actually, but at the same time, that Rupali be a catalyst for the godlike elements in human beings. And may you grow and grow in such a way that just being around is therapeutic. Just being with you is healing. And I'm sure it'll be so. And for that I invoke the divine grace. And with that, with my prayers, Rupali, I'll come to the close of my presentation. I don't know, whatever it is, just a very brief talk. And all my prayers for a beautiful future ahead. Thank you.